Hey, folks, this is Boris Chabess, and you're listening to The Sequel Show. This week, I spoke to one of my favorite people and one of the earliest users of Census. His name is Pete Kazanji. He is the co-founder and CRO of Atrium, which is sales management software that helps managers improve team performance with data. So he sits at the intersection of being data-driven, but actually putting that to good use in service of sales. And in this episode, we actually chatted a whole bunch about the history of sales and how much it's changed and evolved, in particular because of data and automation. And so if you like actionable advice and you like sports analogies, this is the episode for you. We talked about precision in different scenarios. We talked about what modern sales actually is and what you need to be successful, why salespeople are crucial to your customers, how automation should inform your sales behavior, some tricks for identifying talent before you actually have track records and data for them, the importance of what salespeople call pipeline hygiene, which really is just data cleanliness versus just being good at sales. And of course, we talked a bit about remote work versus what Pete calls clustered work, which is on everyone's minds these days. So this was really fun. It's a little bit long. Hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Hey, Pete.
What is shaking, Boris?
You might be the first person I'm talking to on this that is in the earliest, like, you know, the first kind of like 10 Census users.
What's my UID? This is always the thing I love to brag to people about, like, what my instance UID is. Like, I think I was like chorus instance like 14 or something, which is always fun because, like, then you end up with like these like weird bugs later on where like features show up and like there's like a missing value in the field that got added later. So, like, you know, whenever my chorus call recording would show up to people, it would have like null was the name of the call recorder, and people are like, who's null? Because they added a feature to like identify the call recorder, call it, like, you know, the Atrium note taker or whatever, and mine was like null because we were so early. I like you have an action item to figure out which census UID I am.
I believe you are.
You're in the terminal right now
while we're talking. Yeah. You are 110, but that includes.
That feels weak.
I know, but here's the thing. So that's the ID, but that includes
test instances.
A lot of early test instances. There are at least like 10 just census orgs in the first 10. So like. It's not fair to you.
So I'm the seventh. Yeah, I'm the seventh. We're just gonna call it. I'm the seventh. Yeah. Obviously.
Let's go with seven. But you know, like you definitely you understood it early on, which I remember when I was kind of pitching Census in the early days. Right, one of the things that was difficult was we didn't know who our user was. Right, in a way, like who was our fan. And we knew what the product meant to be, but, you know, nowadays it's all so much clearer, like, oh, there's this data persona and they're so, you know, active in their community and we know how to talk to them. But really I was trying to talk to folks like you who are like, I was trying to say like, your sales could be better. Like you could get better data. And some people would look at me like, I don't understand what you're talking about. What's a redshift? and you were that.
I believe my mix. CSM calls it a red shit as opposed to, yeah.
I mean, that's another hindrance, right? Like certain products, you also have to have patience. That's what I always tell, like, startup founders come up to me and be like, you know, I'm in YC right now. What do I do? Da, 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 da. And it's like, sometimes I'm like, yeah, you have to find early signal, but you also sometimes have to have patience. And, you know, when we started, Redshift was the dominant warehouse by far. And
worked fine for our use cases. Like, I mean, you like people complain about it. And the reason why is because usually it's like slow when you're trying to do like a runtime query in Looker or Tableau or something like that. Like, I don't care about that. I just want an integer, like on a contact object in Salesforce or an account object in Salesforce. I want it to be right once a day. because all I care about, I mean, I have other use cases where it has to be like crispier, but like, I mean, I think this is one of the things that people kind of get like wrapped around the axle about. It's like, I always like quote this wrong, and so I probably should get it right at a certain point, but like, there's a difference between like accuracy and precision. There's a difference between those two things. And then moreover, when you're thinking about like analytics, and like, so for folks who don't know me, my name is Pete Kazanji. I'm the CRO and founder of Atrium. Atrium makes data-driven sales management software. The way to kind of, I mean, essentially what it is, it's software that helps sales managers use data to improve team performance. Like AE, SDR, AM, CSM managers use metrics to manage by metric and in an automated way that involves like, you know, anomaly detection, et cetera, et cetera. It all take kind of like takes three minutes to set up out of the box, in contrast to, you know, fighting dragons with like Looker and Tableau for like months and months and months and months. But then what ends up happening is oftentimes people will get spun up and they'll be like, well, I can't calculate this exact specific query right here that I could do if I put a data analyst in a dungeon for 2 weeks and with like a bunch of Red Bull and Tableau. And it's like, cool, man, but like you could have this query right here that is like 90% of the way there and you could have it in 2 seconds. Right, which one is more important? And so similarly, it's like, oh, Redshift is slow. And in our case, it's like, I don't care. Like all it does is like census reads off of it, like a couple, like I think we're actually on hourly syncs right now. It updates a bunch of fields all across like Salesforce. Like I think I'm at the point where I have like 30 fields per contact object being fed by census. And then like a bunch of automations like fire off, a bunch of Salesforce automations fire off of that. You know, a bunch of CSMs get a bunch of notifications, a bunch of AEs get a bunch of notifications. And then like from an operating rhythm standpoint, we have a bunch of reports that read off of it as well. But again, it's just like humans looking at it on a recurrent basis, but it's not like, you know, second by second, well, like tick tock.
I think this is the, you know, you one of the unfortunate, you know, brainworms that mathematically inclined people get is they want it, like you said, they want precision.
Yes.
And when you run a business, a low precision number with like people, basically, if I could teach anything to anyone in almost any field, including by the way, engineering, is confidence intervals. Like,
yep.
You always, yeah, say, exactly. I want to know this information. Like, how high is the Eiffel Tower? If I just ask you that, any, yeah, almost any nerd is going to be like, well, you're going to want to get it really right. Like you would never answer to me. Come on. Most people would not answer somewhere between 10,
higher than a bread
somewhere
box.
Between 10 and a million feet. They wouldn't say that, right? They'd be like, ooh, I think it's 900 and something feet.
I know. It's like,
they try to get it just right.
Yeah. But also just like, yeah. Like what is the problem you're trying to solve there? Right. It's like, how high is the Eiffel Tower? I don't know. Are you trying to jump over it? Are you trying to fly over it? Right? Like, are we laying it down and putting it on a boat? Right? Are we wrapping it? What was the guy? Christo? Are we like wrapping it in, paper? Like, yeah. And like, we run into this a lot as well. Like you have folks who are like, oh, well, like we need to calculate the win rate for these account executives. Really, 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 like, you know, it needs to be super precise. It's like, dude, you're measuring humans who are like, so like squishy. Right. And like, and especially like when you're talking about account executives, like, you know, maybe they close like 2, 3, 4, 5 deals a month, right? Out of, you know, maybe like 15 to 25 ops that they're working. You know, one of those deals goes one way or another in a given month, your win rate like dramatically changes. Like, you know, the CFO got COVID, like it doesn't matter, right? So then you expand it out by like 90 days for, then you make the trailing interval like a little bit bigger, but it's still, you're just like measuring humans, right? Like we're not doing like 3D printing on, you know, like prosthetics that are going to hang off of like, you know, our motorcycle or something, right? Like this is all, it's like, what is it for? Always consider what it's for.
And all of this, you're making me, now we're going to use nerdy stuff to explain this, but like it's, physics also has this, right? Which is like, you need to have like, what are your tolerances? And like, what is the significant digits? Like the idea of a win rate of like 27.83%. And you're like, wait, but what do you think? If we had, if we had won one more deal, what would it be? Oh, it'd be like 35%. I'm like, well, then clearly that is not your significant digit, right? Like you're going, like the precision can lie to you like big time.
No, and also you have to think about like what's going to happen with the downstream consumer as well, because like all of this, especially because in analytics, I forget the gentleman's name. So when we started Atrium back in like 2016, we did about 150 customer interviews, and you know we were talking to sales operations people, sales leaders, customer success leaders, CFOs, you know, analytics folks, etc. And that's how we like quickly honed in on like why sales was the right place to kind of start with this, because I mean, in general, what you have is like you have a, if you think about like where sales managers come from, sales leaders come from, they don't necessarily come from like the math department.
Right.
Right. Like they get into sales. That's fine. Right. Like they're communicators. They're extremely good at like living in somebody else's brain while communicating with them and understanding like, are they coming along? Are they understanding like all those sort of things? And like those skills are, you know, sometimes orthogonal to kind of like the analytical bend. Like, and also it's just like a muscles thing as well. Right. Like you have to grow these muscles by doing it. Like one of the things you have to consider is like the downstream consumer of these things. Right. And so this gentleman had this great phrase. He was like, in analytics is like the what, so what, mm-hmm, and now mm-hmm. what. And then the thing is like the now what is usually executed by somebody, right? Like in our case, you know, we use Census for all sort of, like, I mean, if you follow me on Twitter, A, I feel bad for you. B, you like every weekend, I'm like, it's like every couple weekends, I'm like, oh my God, I love Census so much, because I'm obviously like doing like I'm just like doing Salesforce hackery on the weekend, like while my son is like napping or something. And I'm just like,
I do think, by the way, people have this hilarious, like they think, you know, the executive is like, well, in their spare time they go golfing, and like I honestly I'm just like you, there are certain like menial tasks that I love to do like when it's the downtime.
Salesforce administration. 100%, right? It's just like, oh man, now I can update these workflow rules, it'll be awesome, right? Because like now I don't have any meetings. But here's the thing though, right, is like the downstream consumers of these is generally going to be a human. Right. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, we use Census for customer success use cases and also sales use cases. Big on alerts. Right. And this is why one of the things that I love about Census is, you, like, I'm not like a super technologist by any stretch of the imagination. Like, I get a lot of help from my Census CSM in terms of like feeding and watering our model. It's very helpful. I love her very much. And but then what ends up happening is like once you get these in, this is why like whatever you guys call it, operational analytics is like so impactful, because like once you get the integers into a system that I can administer, like I can administer Salesforce real good, right? Like I know how to do the fields, I know how to do formula fields, I know how to do automations, I know how to do reporting, etc. I just need the int, right, to get into the contact object or whatever.
There's a lot of impact in data you trust that powers your own automation, right? At that point, you can just do whatever you want because you trust the inputs.
Right, exactly. And so then what ends up happening, though, which is really important, is usually like that, those alerts, like it doesn't go to like another server. Right. It doesn't go like this isn't it's not like it's like going into a job queue and like some, you know, some software is going to pick it up and like, you know, reliably execute it. Like it's going to go to a human and they're probably going to have like a 50% like, you know, completion rate on like taking the right action from that
right,
like
because you're saying any alert to a human is effectively really a suggestion because it can't compel the human to do anything, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? And so and so the important thing to do there is like one this is why like I'm a big fan of operating rhythms, right? So like meetings that have like this is the purpose of this meeting. This is one of the kind of phrases that we use at Atrium is calendar is destiny, right? So you like you have this time on the calendar. It's supposed to like this is the thing that's supposed to happen right now. Whether it's a, like a live meeting or it's like a time block, like hey, the account executives are supposed to prospect right here. And by the way, here's the report that they use to prospect out of, right? And like, or in the, and you know maybe in the CS case, it's like, hey, here's the time when you like go across your, you know, you grow across your customer pipeline as, you know, as run by this report right here that is prioritized by a bunch of Census data that's hanging out in there. Sure. Right. And so it's kind of back to the, like the false precision or the false conception of like, oh my God, this has to be like really precise. It's like, look, we'll use Atrium as an example. Like, Atrium is counting this this meeting in the on this rep's calendar right here, where he you know where he had lunch with somebody who wasn't one of his prospects. So like, you know, I can't trust the data. It's like, So let me get this straight. He had five meetings instead of four, right? You know what I'm saying is five meetings versus four. The important thing here is that all of your other account executives are having 15. So what the hell is going on with that rep right there, right? And it's like, and I think that what's happening right now from a business analytics standpoint, because I know that a lot of the people that like play around with Census are like data people. And what's happening is like the non-data people are starting to have to become data people. And that's like, I mean, that's who we work with all day long is, sales managers, SDR managers, sales leaders, sales operations people are usually data people. So like we're kind of helpful for them. They're like, oh my God, I can stop doing like the dumb report monkey stuff that like, is the bane of my existence. And like, oh, you're telling me that these guys can self-serve without having to like me having to like knock down their Jira tickets or like getting like leg humped on Slack. Oh my God, thank you. Please take the sales managers from me, please. But what you have to do is you have to bring these folks along and help them understand the kind of the tenets that we're talking about right now, like, an appropriate amount of precision, right, for the use case, right? Or like or interpretation or reasoning or what have you, right? All of these are like
Well,
new muscles for business people, for business users, right? As opposed to analysts.
so I actually want to I want to dive into that because you are, in some ways, your software is the embodiment of you because I only know so many sales leaders. Well, but it's not, that's not random, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I only know so many, let's call it sales and business leaders, broadly speaking, right? And you know more of them. But one thing that seems perennially true, seems to be, and maybe it's a factor of an old time and it's changing, I'm curious, is it seems like there's these two kinds of sales leader personas, right? The charismatic boiler room persona,
Yeah,
right?
that's
And
me.
and the data operational persona. And like,
Oh, I see where
is
this is
that
going.
you see what I mean? Like
Yeah, no, for sure.
So how does one, are those two archetypes? And is that just like, are these just two paths in life? Or the way, when I listen to you, I'm like, yeah, everyone needs to get there. So how did you become, I guess, charismatic sales leader with strong data and operational cadence
Yeah.
sensibility?
I started in this with the strong data and operational sensibility, and then like we bolted on like the charisma had to be like built. And what I would argue to everyone, this is like, so I wrote a book on sales for founders because like,
There
I would
somewhere.
cons oh yeah, is it up on your shelf?
It's
Yeah, I
on my
love it.
shelf somewhere, I swear.
Yeah, it's never been read. I think one of the things that I like to tell to founders is like so many people love to like kind of talk their own book, like, oh yeah, I'm a natural sales, natural born seller. It's like, shut up, man. That's bullshit. Right? Like it's just a muscle. It's like, oh, I'm a natural JavaScript, right? No, you're not. Like you just learned JavaScript and you did a bunch of it, right? And so when people like all of these things are just muscles. And so when people talk about like, oh, I'm a natural born sales, it's like, no, you're not. Like you grew up with like four siblings and like you had to negotiate amongst them all the time and like you had a good friend group and what like you've been practicing for this moment the whole time and then like and then you were in like sports or like the Greek system in college or whatever. So you're like you're highly attuned to like interpersonal dynamics amongst like multi-party kind of like Mexican standoff situations and kind of like stuff like that. Like I mean these are all the sort of skills that would be required in order to be an effective like mid-market or enterprise seller. And the same is true on like the flip side as well. Now I think like getting data driven or analytical is like it's there are plenty of people who would love to like talk their own book and be like, oh yeah, it's very hard. You should hire me to do it for you. Right. And it's just like, yeah, of course you're going to say that. First, now I would make the argument that there is like an old dog's new trick sort of situation. And like, I'm getting to the point where it's like starting to become difficult for me to like learn new things. Like I mean, it's hilarious, right? I have a 4-year-old and it's like amazing to watch his like neuroplasticity. Like he just like does one thing once and is like, and then is like nails at it. And I'm just like, Jesus, I can't even remember what I did for
I'm
lunch
very worried
yesterday.
about. I played chess with my nephew in March, and like, I'm pretty sure next visit it's over for me. Like, I'm
It's gonna
pretty
like
sure.
smoke you. Yeah. It's yeah, but so what my claim would be there, so long story short, around kind of like your question about these paradigms, it's like, look, what's happening is the reason why they're like the historical archetype associated with like the charismatic sales leader is because that is where if you think about like where CROs came from back in the day, where they come from, oh, they come from VPs of sales. Well, where do those come from? Oh, well, they come from sales managers. Okay, where do those come from? Oh, well, they come from account executives. Okay, where do the account executives come from? Oh, well, they come from like the lacrosse field or whatever, right? And then moreover, there's also, but here's the other thing though. Back in the day, there's a really good blog post by Nate Silver called Rich Data, Poor Data. And he has this kind of key insight in it where he says like the precondition, it's about sports analytics. And he's like the precondition of having really good analytics in a given like sporting environment is you have to have well-modeled data. I mean, it's kind of like tautological, but if you think about it, you're like, oh, well, like, duh. Right. So like the place where sports analytics showed up first was in baseball. Why baseball? Well, baseball's been around for 100 years. The game is really slow because it's turn-based and slow. You can manually score it. So essentially what we've had for like north of 100 years is we've had a bunch of people like manually declaring the state and the changing state of baseball games in the form of scorebooks. And I know that you're from France and Canada and other places where they don't believe in baseball.
No, definitely not. They want sports with a real-time clock that actually like runs out.
Right. Yeah, exactly, right? So here's the problem though, is that, so baseball, like, so you have this like insane data corpus for baseball that's been around, right? Like you can interrogate the history of baseball through like an XML file. It's like awesome. And so of course, like the degenerate gamblers in Vegas did this very early on and were like, hey, there's like an opportunity for us to like exploit this data for like fun and profit. We're going to go ahead and do it. Cool. So this is why it took a while for like it to show up in basketball and soccer and whatever, because it's all real time. So what you needed was you needed motion capture cameras, which could then turn that into plots on the court, which then turned into events. Like you needed good eventing on it, and only then could you do the analysis on it. And so like one of the early interviews that we did for Atrium was the guys who do the analytics for the Warriors. It was in 2016, right? It was these guys called MoCap, Motion Capture Analytics. They were like a consultant to the Warriors. These two guys, like, I think they were both like Caltech dudes. They were great. Like I met with them at a Pete's Coffee in Menlo Park, and we were talking about all this. And like the key insight that the Warriors had was like, hey, it turns out that like the shot percentage from like 3 inches inside the 3-point line is very, very similar to the shot percentage from 3 inches beyond the 3-point line. But guess what? Your point per shot kind of goes up just, by 50%. And so maybe just like take a step back and maybe not just take a step back, but also like let's run plays where people like end up beyond the arc more frequently. And then moreover, maybe we should like recruit more people who are good at those things. And so those were all analytics driven insights that then drove actions. Okay, cool. So like use that as a metaphor and then say, wonderful. Well, 20 years ago in sales, did you have any data?
Right.
No.
You're saying so we couldn't be data driven because we couldn't measure it.
There's no data. And so the funny thing was like people would try. Like, so one of the kind of really funny things that I learned, through all those interviews, I interviewed this really fun guy, RJ Vissers, longtime sales operations leader. And so there's all these people who like tried to model it. Mm-hmm. Like John McMahon's a great example of this as well. There was this class of sales leader or sales operations person. So John McMahon is like the author of Qualified Sales Leader. He has an engineering background. You'll run into them occasionally. Right, like Mark Roberge is probably like on the cusp here. Like he was a mechanical engineer undergrad, I want to say at MIT. So it's like you had these folks who like were systems thinkers who kind of like tripped into sales. So RJ, one of the things that he would do way back in the day, because this is before Salesforce, right?
Right.
Before you had like a cloud database that you could like shove things into, RJ would instrument his reps based on their expense reports. Because if you think about it, the more lunches, breakfasts and lunches and coffees and dinners you're doing with your clients, essentially what they were is these were meetings. And so the like there's a linear correlation between meeting volume, customer facing meeting volume, and bookings. And so what this was a mechanism by which to get the data into Redshift, sorry,
his spreadsheet of the time,
whatever it was, like
his
exactly.
Lotus 1-2-3, spreadsheet. Yeah, no, I got you.
Right. So like what these guys would do is they would send in their expense reports, right, and they would collate them, and like he could very early on like understand like who was hustling and who was not, and like moreover, it couldn't be done just based on like amount of money.
No, it had to be it's number of lunches, right? That's the whole point. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. And it couldn't be in like, right. And so you could like literally see how busy someone was based on it anyway. So the point is that like, yeah, of course, like sales. So current sales, like the 50 something, 60 something sales leaders, they came up in that era, right? So it'd be very difficult for them. It's not impossible, but it's like very difficult because like there wasn't a lot of data. Whereas now I was talking to this, the woman who runs sales operations for Orca Security earlier, delightful woman named Jody. You know, she's been around the block a couple of times. The funny thing is like, she used to be an attorney and a finance person. And now she's, you know, this VP.
That's a wild career change.
Well, but it's all like systems thinkers, right? And
right.
And then more like you start to, there's definitely like this like revenge of the nerds kind of like thing going on right now, where you'll oftentimes see like new CROs used to be sales operations people, or like, and like they don't have to be sales operations. You're also seeing people who are like, you know, have a finance or econ or STEM or whatever background going into sales, because they recognize that it's not all about like a bunch of jocks like stuffing people in the lockers or whatever. It's like, actually what I like to describe sales, like effective sales, is, you know, you're a consultant that happens to have a predilection to a certain
solution. Yeah,
exactly. But like, you're not going to shut, like the joke I always say is like, people say, oh man, that guy's a great salesperson, you could sell like ice to an Eskimo. My response to that is like, that guy's an asshole. Like, the Eskimo doesn't need any ice. Like, what are you doing? Right? Like, that's a bad salesperson. Right. Mm. And so by virtue of the fact that that's like not the case anymore in like modern sales, where modern sales is like a more operationally effective mechanism by which for like, you know, supply objects to like run around and like find demand in the market and like take them down.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, so that appeals to that type of person who then is like, oh, okay. And then when they stop being a seller, they go into manager. They're like, oh, this is just a factory. This is like a little revenue factory. And that has like a bunch of little assembly lines on, and I can measure those assembly lines with data. And so what you're seeing is like this convergence of like, but because the assembly lines are humans and because the counterparties in sales are also human, you still need the human like charisma, interpersonal interaction, like the ability to like communicate effectively, to understand effectively, all those sort of things. They're just merging together. And so you're getting a lot of like, the woman who's the CRO at GitHub right now is this woman named Erica Anderson. She used to be the head of sales operations there. The gentleman who is currently the acting CRO at a company called Brazen, Will Foley, he's like super, super smart. Used to be a sales operations person at Brazen, and then previously at Splash as well. And so what's happening is like the required capabilities of the modern sales leader is that you have to have like data familiarity has to be like a first class capability for it. Now, the good news is there's like technologies that help with that. Like,
sure.
Obviously Adream is a good example of that. It can't be like those situations, those like that awkward meeting in Moneyball. Brad Pitt is sitting there like snapping and pointing at Jonah Hill and being like, speak. And all the scouts are like, no, man, like screw you, kid, get the fuck out of here, et cetera. It's like the people who are like hostile. And we see this with some of like, you know, some of our prospects and some of our customers. You have people who are like hostile to the notion of instrumentation and like, you know, data-driven sales management. And it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, science advances like one funeral at a time. Like, cool, like we're going to do our best to kind of like educate you on this. And we're going to like show you like why your founders and your board expect this of you, and like why your managers who report to you, like, they really want to use, like, they've grown up with like Whoops and Apple Fitness and like Peloton and whatever. Like, they get it, right? Like, they watch ESPN Statcast and they watch like, you know, all the sports analytics stuff. So like, if you're standing between them and, you know, higher performance through being more data driven, like, A, you're stymieing the performance of your team. Also, you're just going to get replaced, right? And that might be the case, right? Like, you know, eventually, like, the talent pool will cycle out, and like, this will just be like a new capability that's just expected.
Yeah. You said something there too, that it's still humans at the end, right? In between, like, you're efficiently creating markets, but it's still humans, you know, transacting, right? At some level.
Yeah.
So I assume you would also be kind of negative on the hype that we used to have a few years ago on like AI chatbots and all these ways in which people would engage with companies, right? Because I feel like that might be stepping one step kind of too far.
I think you nailed it right there. it's like stepping too far is what screws you. And so what we can do is we can interleave efficiency and like automation at different points in the funnel to make things more effective. Like as an example, I wrote this article for Lenny Rachitsky's newsletter about like layering on and I think I actually talked about Census a bunch in it, layering on a sales organization or a sales motion, a sales assist motion to a self-serve model.
Right, sure.
And so the thing is that, like, I'll give you an example. Like a lot of like entrepreneurs love to tell themselves a story that their product can be like self-serve and like that's gonna, like, they're gonna be able to win the market that way.
Pete, I can make baseball references. It's like Field of Dreams, right?
Yeah.
You'll build it and they will come.
I need you to make hockey and cheese references.
Fine, I will.
And so I think like adding leverage to your go-to-market motion through automation is fine, but like pretending that you're going to like replace the sales component is like probably nonsense. And like that's how you end up as like, you know, without thinking about like who your end customer is and how you're going to be able to transact with them, that's how you end up in like a local maximum. Like, you know, you might use Dropbox as an example of this, right? Where, you know, you didn't realize, like, you thought that your lead gen was actually your business and you didn't put enough features and resources into the needs of like the enterprise or the mid-market or whatever it was that, you know, those other kind of ancillary users that probably your sales team was telling you about, and then you kind of like end up stuck. And so it's important to like think about how we can do optimization at the edges. Like, I'll use us as an example. One of the primary use cases we use Census for, we talked about the customer success use cases. Another use case that we use Census for. So Atrium has like a sales assist motion. It takes like 3 minutes to set up an Atrium account. Like, you just sign in with your Salesforce account. It's like read only. And then like the data syncs over like an hour or so. And then like you've got this world-class metrics harness that's just like sitting there. And it's like, you know, it's doing all this anomaly detection, et cetera, et cetera. And so what our AEs do is they sell on top of customer data, right? Like, so hey, Boris, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to give you a tour of this. We're going to walk you through this. We're going to get you set up with like, you know, some relevant dashboards or like alert feeds associated with your key use cases. But then, and so then usually like it runs its course over like a week or two. It's like, hey, look, does this solve your problem? Great. We're going to go ahead and transact. So it's very data doggy.
Okay.
In this regard, it's like, it's very much like data dogs, like sales motion, right? And so what we use is like, would we tell ourselves a story that we could like have people self-servicing off of that? Hell no, right? Like, because we're creating this new market right now with like people who don't necessarily have this muscle, they need some spoon feeding and some assistance, which is great. Like, that's what our account executives are for. They're fantastic at it. They're more kind of like, you know, data concierges than they are like, you know, sellers or whatever. But what you want to be able to do is understand which of the people are like getting it and which of the people are like kind of, you know, giving you like lip service there. And so being able to differentiate by data and action, like, oh man, this person, like, we set up these dashboards for this person, we set up these goals, and this guy is in there like two times every day, like trailing 7 days, like, okay, cool, he's got a crush on this, right? He's gonna buy. You were kind of talking about like taking a step too far. In this case, we've got automation and data that's being brought to bear, but to inform a sales behavior that is being prosecuted by a human, as compared to like, if we tried to have people like self-serve Atrium, I mean, the amount of like engineering resources that it would require in order to like get like a fully like self-explainable, self-driving product with what essentially like what is like automated Looker and Tableau would be like bananas. I would have had to raise like $50 million. We'd still be building it.
But I think you said something really interesting, right? Which is you get this piece of information of, are they, you know, when they're within their trial period, are they using this feature or not? Right. And are they starting to get addicted to, you know, the thing that we demoed to them, et cetera.
Yep.
The decision you make after that, I think if you were naive or kind of very robotic in your thinking, or you didn't even use humans, you might say, well, let's just start bombarding them with emails about like, why haven't you checked out the dashboard? Check out the dashboard. Check out the dashboard. You know, which is kind of like, let's call it the marketing kind of maybe historical perspective on this. And I think sometimes it just means no, like double down on the person who's using it twice a day or twice a week.
Right. With the other ones, it's like, hey, we'll get you next time.
Yeah.
Right. Like, clear, like you're the one who wants to get in a fight with like Jonah Hill. right? Like, oh, what are you talking about? Like, this doesn't matter. It's like, man, like I showed you on a product tour that of your, like of your eight AEs, two of them have like 20 untouched opportunities that haven't had a touch on them. And see, like Atrium is like losing its mind about these two account executives right here and how bad their pipe hygiene is. And like, if you can't take that to the bank, like, I don't know what to tell you, bro. Right. Like, I just hope your leader doesn't find out. Right. And it's kind of versus people like when we talk to them are like, oh my God, I've been asking sales ops for this for like 2 quarters. Oh, okay. Well, like we're done. Oh my gosh. Okay, cool. Can I, like, I have a corporate credit card. Can I put it on this? Right. Like those are the people. And then you start with that person and like, now they're like,
they're a net promoter within their organization.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. One of the things that I say in my book on startup sales is like salespeople are the grease, like they're economic grease. Right. And so what you're trying to do is like they're like scurrying around the market, finding people and like businesses that have the problem that this product solves. Right. And but moreover, what they also are is like, you know, organizations are not monolithic, right? There's like different humans within that organization who may have different levels of perception of the problem that they have or receptiveness to it. So if you try to like address the organization as a monolith, right, and you encounter like, you know, one decision maker or what have you who tells you, no, 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 go pound sand, like use us as an example, right? Like, so if we engage some organization, we talk to like the VP of sales operations first. Right. So it's a very large organization. But like, cool. So like, how do you guys use data to manage your, to improve your, the performance of your sales team? Like, oh, wow. Well, we have this like insane Tableau implementation that we have all hooked up and, you know, oh, okay. How long has it been going? Oh, like we worked on it for like 2 or 3 years. How many analysts do you guys have working on? Oh, like 8. Okay, cool. Like, how's that working? Oh, as far as I can tell, it's great. Like we have these like dashboards that we take screenshots of and we put them into a PowerPoint presentation. We hand it to the CEO and the CRO. And so if like we took that at face value and we're like, okay, I guess there's no opportunity here. But then you go talk to the sales managers or the SDR manager, like, so cool. How do you use you know, data to improve your performance of your team? And they're like, oh yeah, well, like, you know, we have these like crazy Tableau dashboards that nobody looks at because like of the 20 tiles that is in my workbook, like 5 of them are broken. And like the guy who maintained them, like he left like 90 days ago. And like, I think I filed a Jira ticket in order to refresh them. Also the other ones, I just like, honestly, it's just kind of like reading tea leaves. So, okay. So like, what do you do instead? Oh, we just don't like, we don't look at it.
Right.
Oh, okay. So how's that working out? And so the point is to your point earlier about like, sometimes like you want to find the person who like gets it and like use them as your lead blocker. And if you, and this is why, like, I don't like PLG as a phrasing because it makes it sound like the product is going to do all the work. But if instead you can like demonstrate utility, get like a value loop going on, that's for you, Kevin. If you can get like a loop, like a value loop going on there where the person's like, this is good. I like it. I want to continue to consume it. I'm going to consume it week over week over week. I'm going to keep doing it month over month. It's like, cool. Like we just did a POC here, right? Like it works within this organization, but rather than like bowl over 8 managers or whatever, even for the ones who are like not getting it. And then like literally I was on a customer health call earlier with our customer success team. And like, this is what they do. Like we have, yeah, at this point, like we're almost at 300 customers. We have some organizations that have like, you know, 20 sales managers or like 30 sales managers using this. And you have like varying levels of like adoption within those groups. And so what the CSMs will do is they'll say like, hey, here's the like 5 superstars right here. Like they're the ones who are going to get promoted, right? They're having more success. And then what they do is they use that as like a bludgeon like, and go to the leadership and are like, hey, so here's the situation. You guys threw down, you know, this many tens of thousands of dollars in order to make this happen. These are the folks who are having lots of success right here. By the way, you should give them a cookie, right? Like you should be proud of them because they're being very data driven. Like they're going to drive higher performance out of their team. The next people that I'm going to work on in order to improve their adoption are these people over here, as indicated by their census usage or their usage as populated by census. You know, I would really appreciate some air cover, right? And of course, you turn around and you go to the users who are like hitting the ball out of the park and you're like, hey guys, you guys are really crushing it. I just wanted to let you know that like, I let your leader know that you guys are like, that you're so smart and handsome and like you're like kicking ass, and then they're like, oh, well, that's fantastic. You know, I already really like this, but now I like the fact that I'm getting kudos from the CSM who also is telling my leader that like,
yeah, who's outside your org, which has such high impact. Like,
yeah, exactly. Like, hey,
unbelievable impact.
Yeah. Like, hey, we, you know, we have nearly 300 customers, probably interact with like tens of thousands of sales leaders. I got to say that this guy right here, he's really taking care of business. And then the VP of sales is like, oh, okay. Right. And so like, you don't have that information if you don't have operational analytics piping that into like a system that you, that is easily accessible, right?
To me, this is also, I think, you know, my almost like personal mission is to give people more, you know, more individuals, more leverage, more knowledge, more power, right? And your story there is actually really interesting because like these CSMs at Atrium wield tremendous power over their customers indirectly through their manager, right? They can, and I've seen this over and over again, which is in our users, and I'm sure you it happens, I'm positive, even more so than with us, but especially to leaders at certain companies that are, you know, whether they're using our product, trialing our product, whatever. And invariably, they ask, like, are we doing well? Are we good? Because you know, right, Boris, you know, you work with these other logos that are like, really, really good. Like, please tell me, how do I rate compared to them? Do you know?
Yeah.
Because everyone's in a fog of war.
Yeah. And I think the thing, this is one of the things I was talking about with my customer success team today is like, so sometimes these customer success staff is like, they don't necessarily have like the confidence to know, like, oh, well, I'm just like little old me. Am I allowed to say this thing? And it's like,
right. Am I allowed?
Yeah. And it's like, well, yeah, right. Like, you have this amazing information at your disposal. Like, you have 50, like you have a book of 50, you know, 50 customers, you have a book of 100 customers or whatever. And like, you look across the data, right, and you can see, you know, what good looks like and what is not. Like, yeah, of course you can. Like, you know, like, and this is one of the things that I have to challenge my account executives with a lot. Cause like, you know, they're 26, 28, 30, whatever. And they're talking to, you know, some gray haired 40 something year old asshole like me.
You don't look a day over 39. Don't worry.
Yeah. Thanks. It's because I'm wearing a hat. And so being able to say like, hey, like you're thinking about that wrong. Or of course the polite sales way of saying that is like, you know, we talked to a lot of customers and a lot of them felt that way, but what they found was that it turns out that if you're not using leading indicators to you know measure and manage the successful ramp of your reps, like you're going to be in a world of hurt, right? So you know, anyway, this is something that I have to instill in my sales team and in our customer success team constantly. Is like, yeah, you guys know, right? Like 6 months into the role here at Atrium, you're going to know more about like using metrics to manage a sales team, like reps or a team, than 98% of like sales leadership. And so you just have to like realize that like you have that comprehension and then use it, like have the backbone to kind of say like, yeah, no, you're thinking about that wrong. Or, hey, these people are having lots of success in your organization. These other people are not over here. Let's work together to get them. Cause like, we can see that these, like this third of your organization is like setting the world on fire. Let's get everybody else there. Right. Like we have the existence proofs. And even if we don't have the existence proof in your organization, I have a book of business of 50 customers and I know, like, I know it's not me. I know it's you, but I can help you get better. Right.
I mean, in my experience, great leaders of almost any level, or great ICs too, if you don't feel like you're not great, like I basically can't, I have trouble working with people who consider themselves already great. Like I'm saying, even the best people tend to want to improve and tend to see what's missing and want that kind of feedback. It has to be delivered, right? Obviously. And like you obviously have worked with your team to deliver this very tactfully. It goes back to, you know, customer experience.
What we found.
Yes, what I've seen work. Yeah, what I've heard. Yeah.
Our most successful customers, ..
This might be irreducible, right? Like certain feedback may, I mean, you and I were talking about this just before we started recording, where it's like some feedback a computer is really good at delivering because it's impersonal, and some is going to always be better delivered from a human, I think. You'll just react better. Okay, I have two, like you make me want to go down two paths here, so I'm just going to pick one, but I'll get back to the other one too. We talked a bit about like how leaders in sales, especially like why they couldn't, or they couldn't have been data-driven, you know, 30, 40 years ago, and why. I understand now that there's a greater body of measurement that you can rely on. But you also said, is someone following up on their pipeline, right? You were talking about the individual IC kind of work items around tracking your work, right? And seeing the results of it. And so this is another question I always have, which is, to what degree is success of the individual in whether it's customer success, sales, all these kinds of roles, which, like you said, right, require some amount of human touch, at least a minimum. To what degree is success tied to how they execute in the moment versus the consistency in the follow-up? Like, basically, mm-hmm. how should I value pipeline hygiene, to use the word you used earlier? Like, mm-hmm. how important is that? Like, is that more important than just being, quote-unquote, good at sales?
Well, I mean, I think the way that you're good at sales is like being good at sales is a collection of behaviors. Like being good at anything is like a collection of behaviors. And then what you do is you measure the collection of, like you measure the execution of those collection of behaviors, right? So the example earlier, like because like any human process, the outputs are just the combination of a high quantity of high quality execution. So then mm-hmm. what you need to do is you need to measure the quantity, you have to count things, and then you have to measure the quality, which are usually ratios, right? Conversion ratios, you know, various ratios. And then by like, and that's the true in like any factory, that's true in any sort of like process. And so, and what those things usually represent is like, they're echoes, they're metrical echoes of behaviors, right? So like a good example of this would be a successful salesperson is to be highly active.
Okay.
Right. So how would you measure that? Well, they should be having high number of like customer facing meetings. Okay. So if somebody's having a high volume of customer facing meetings in a given, you know, in a given period, that would indicate that they're engaging in the behavior that is needed. Well, another behavior that is needed is they have to be like persuasive, and they have to be good at progressing like sales conversations. So then a metrical echo of how good they are at like advancing those sales conversations would be, how many second meetings are they having? Are they doing a good job of converting first meetings into second meetings, right? That is a metrical echo. And so that's a ratio, right? Like we call it a follow-up meeting ratio. Like how good are you at getting second dates? The same would be true of like opportunity conversion rates. How effective are you at getting your opportunities that are in stage one to stage two? And so these are, but again, these are metrical echoes of successful behaviors. And so then what ends up happening is like, oh, okay, well, how many behaviors are there? Well, there's a lot, right? And so this is why any given thing that you measure is not, it's like necessary, but not sufficient in order to understand. So like, this is why it's like sports is so helpful as a heuristic here is like, you look at any, you know, baseball player, like a batter or whatever, like, or, you know, a pitcher or whatever, like they're going to have different like softnesses in their performance. And you can figure out what those softnesses are based on those metrical echoes. Right. So like use a baseball player as an example, you might say like, oh, okay, well, like your batting average is pretty good and your on base percentage is pretty good. But, you know, your slugging percentage, which essentially is like the base adjusted, like how many bases you get on a per at bat okay. basis, right? It's like weighted batting average. It's not that great, right? Like your ratio between like your batting average and your slugging percentage is lower than everybody else's. And what that means is that you're weak. And what that means is that we need to get you in the weight room, right? We need you to, we need you to bulk up as an example. And so then a prescription comes out of that, right? And that might be totally different than another player. And so like, this is why one of the things that we really focus on here at Atrium, and that's why the way that we describe Atrium, right, is we don't call it like analytics, we call it data-driven sales management. And the way mm-hmm. that we describe it is we say it helps managers use data and metrics to improve rep performance, because each rep is going to have a different improvement area for their bundle of behavior. So one rep will have a pipeline hygiene problem, as indicated by the fact that they have an ungodly number of untouched ops because maybe they're not as organized as they should be. And so what we need to do is then stripe time on their calendars for opportunity management. Another rep doesn't have that problem. They have a different problem. Mm-hmm. They struggle getting opportunities out of stage one into stage two. Wonderful. That seems like maybe that's a newly promoted SDR who has a hard time asking for the next meeting or struggling with discovery in order to reveal to the prospect that they're talking about or talking to the pain that they have. So that's a different behavior that has a different problem with it. And so we need to fix that. But all of these are diagnosed via, you know, these metrical echoes, and then we prescribe the action, right? We prescribe the get well plan, and then we measure whether or not that's happening, right?
Yeah. Okay. So you've put a beautiful framework on my question. Now I can ask the question more precisely. Is it more valuable, and I know you're going to tell me it depends, but is it more valuable to spike on, let's call it, the ability to take a meeting from stage one to stage two, right? Let's call that one of the, you've got that, what is it, that spider graph, right? Like you've got the five kinds of skills.
Right.
Versus being like, let's call it like being amazing at that. Like if you spiked at that and you were kind of mediocre at everything else versus spiking at high consistency organizational skills around managing a pipeline hygiene and making sure you know exactly the state of everything that's going on in your life. Like, 'cause I imagine early in a career, people kind of, it's hard to see what they're unbelievable at, and you probably only notice one thing, is my assumption.
Well, but what the answer to that is that you should be like, we should seek to use your kind of spider graph, you know, example, we should always be seeking to expand the area under the curve. So like, if you're good at one thing, that's all well and good. Okay, well, what's the next thing that we're going to get good at? Right.
Sure.
So like, what's the next constraint and the next critical path? And so to use the baseball player analogy, it's like, hey, look,
I have a better example. This is like Shaq should have practiced free throws, right? Is the idea.
Sure. There you go. Right.
But he chose not to, because I guess the area under the curve was large enough. He was like, I'm good.
Yeah, perhaps. Right. So I think that's a really good example, because it turns, but actually this, I forget the guy who was on the Orlando Magic, who was like really terrible at free throws, but like what ends up happening, like if you have an adversary, right, they can exploit those weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And so in the case of sales, you don't really have an adversary, but like in the case, like in that example, like this person is really good at like slam dunks or whatever, but okay, we're just going to foul the hell out of them constantly, right? And force them to go to the free throw line. Well, like if you couldn't foul the hell out of him anymore and like send him to free throw line, because like all of a sudden he's like, haha, I spent the entire summer like shooting free throws and now I'm really good at it. Well, like now, like that person would be really amazing at what it is that like, they're much more formidable. And the same is true with like salespeople. Like, you know, you should always be improving the incremental thing, right? My friend Brett Burson had this great tweet where I think he was actually like retweeting Tyler Cowen or something like that. Where it's like, what is the thing that you do that is kind of like, that is akin to pianists playing scales, right? Da 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 da.
I've heard you mention this. Yeah. What's your cut?
Yeah. Like, right? Yeah. Like, what's the thing that you do on a recurrent basis in order to like hone your craft? Ideally, there's an intentional thing that you're trying to get better at. And this is where good management, like, you know, whether it's sales management or other management, but like can help you. So you can say, hey, we see that you have this pipeline hygiene problem, or we see that you have, like, we see that you're not prospecting at all. And, yeah, you know, that is clear in the data. And so what we're going to do is we're going to work together to get you much more effective at prospecting. And that's going to be the one thing that we're going to work on for the next like 2 to 4 weeks. Because we identified this shortfall, and then we're going to prescribe a solution to you, and we're going to measure whether or not you're doing it or not, right? And then, like, you just expand the area under the curve.
And just rinse and repeat, and life.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just the loop, right? You just do it again, well, right? Do it again.
Okay, but then here's something I assume your friends and customers ask you, I imagine, which is, how do you get better at the entry point into this, which is, when you don't have the KPIs and the track records, and I'm hiring someone in any of these roles, right? And I think we can expand beyond, you know, CS and sales, but like just into any knowledge worker role. I mean, have you developed any systems for identifying talent before you have the data and track record, which is, you know, it's all approximate, right? Everything we do in interviews, I assume is, I think, I'm assuming, yeah. I hope you don't have a magic solution.
Yeah, I do think that to the extent you can be like more data driven during the interview process, that can be really impactful. Now, one of the things that I like to do is use job simulation in order to kind of like elicit the characteristics of high performance. And so essentially what you do is like you manufacture a data set, a small data set in the process. So like I'll use, engineering does this a lot, right? Like people do like coding interviews, they do whiteboard sessions, they like do pair programming, et cetera. It's the same thing in sales, right? So like what our hiring process is in sales is we have our account executive candidates do a mock discovery call and demo with me, not of our solution, but of their
No,
solution,
some
right?
other
So
product.
I, right. So imagine I was like hiring a sales rep for Census, right? Or sorry, hiring a sales rep who like used to work at Census. I'd be like, cool. Like, I can be like a head of biz ops, or I can be a head of data, like whatever persona you want to make me, and like go ahead and give me the scenario that you want. Like, okay, you're the head of data at this organization. You have a head of customer success, a head of marketing, and a head of a head of sales who are asking you for these different like pieces of information. You also have a revenue operations person who administers all their tooling and what have you. Currently, you guys are using Tableau in order to kind of present information to people, but it's critically pathed on the data person, and unfortunately, you can't take any action out of Tableau because it's terrible and slow. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like that's a scenario. Great. Like you do discovery with me. Like I'm that person. And then, you elicit all those pain points from me. You do a good job around that, and then present Census to me in a way that ties to those pain points. And then, how good do you do that? And you'd be shocked. And sorry, that's like a more involved version. We also do asynchronous versions of this as well, where like we just do like written intakes, right? Because it turns out that account executives and SDRs, like they write a lot, right? They're the higher order bit is that they're communicators, and one of the mechanisms by which they communicate is through written.
Sorry, LinkedIn messages. I forgot. That's their main
Yeah,
social
like
network.
well,
Sorry.
right, like well, through like written format, right? They also do it through spoken format, but one of the primary mech. And so, you'd be shocked. Like you hand people a written intake of like, 10 questions or a dozen questions or whatever that are like not like problematic, but more like, hey, Boris, like tell me something you built that you're really proud of, and like, they don't answer it at all. They don't do any work. Right. Like, yeah. And like, I mean, it's just like really great to like very quickly filter folks out. It's like, cool. Like you would waste my time and your time in like a live conversation, but you can't be bothered to spend like 30 minutes to jot down some answers to, in this Google Doc. Like, I'm glad that you told on yourself so early in this process.
Yeah, these are not like capital H hard questions. These are just,
Totally. Right. Right. So what we just did was we revealed a unit example of a behavior. Right, so in sales, one of the behaviors you need to be able to do is like grit. Grit is extraordinarily important in sales because you're just constantly being told no. It's like highly effort based, et cetera, et cetera. And so like if you can't get up the dander to like knock out, a 30-minute or a 60-minute like written intake, that it not only indicates to me that you have very low grit, it also like and then moreover, if like you do it but you half-ass it, well, guess what? Like, an effective mid-market salesperson in a technology organization is going to need high attention to detail with respect to prosecuting their sales pipeline. And so okay, you just told on yourself in a different way. And so what well, the point being here is that like what we're doing is we're through job simulation is we're eliciting a bunch of like we're authenticating these behaviors and or like authenticating or disqualifying authenticating the absence of these behaviors in a way that's really effective for these folks. And then later on, so like ideally you filter folks out into your like filter folks out of the organization who shouldn't be there. But if for whatever reason, and we had this recently where I had to fire a rep who really like did okay in the it was more of a speculative hire, but like did okay in a hiring and like in the recruiting pipeline. But like, getting in a month like month two or month three, like you could really see in the metrics the kind of echoes of like the issues that he had. And we worked on them, right? And tried to like remediate, Like, it's like, hey, like, here's the situation right here. Like, you're not on top of these opportunities right here. Your conversion rates are low. Your opportunities are frequently in the wrong stage. Do you see how these things, like, do you see how your time and stage is like wildly off right here? It's actually not because it's not because those ops are actually in that stage. It's because like you can't reliably update the CRM because you have low attention to detail. We're going to work on this. Okay. We're not going to work on this anymore. Okay. Here's the door.
I love when you can ask questions. You know, it's like the university psychology test, right? It was like, here, you're going to look at these magazines. That's actually not the test. You know, it's like the other thing. Mm. And to your point about like, just write me about something you're proud of. Like, yeah, that's not the job, but it reveals a really perfect kind of aspect of your mannerisms or whatever that actually is explanatory for the job, which I love that.
That's a really good point.
I feel like I'm always looking for those and I don't always have them. And so that doesn't even feel that hard to implement, right? Like,
well, no, like I started doing it like at my last software company because I was working with a couple of recruiting agencies and like, obviously recruiting agencies like really have a economic incentive to like put a butt in a seat. And so initially right. A friend of mine was having candidates do like video like introductions, because this was like 10 years ago, so like iPhone was like first out or whatever. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of cool, but you know, seems kind of like a pain in the ass for them. I don't really like that. It seems like a lot of work, right? And so then I was like, okay, well, what's like the MVP version of this? I was like, just like, you know, Google Doc that's got like half a dozen or a dozen questions. And then also was like, this kind of goes back to our point about like appropriate level of precision. Like, this didn't have to be an amazing like personality inventory or whatever, because like literally what it does is like 50% of the time it like screens out people who like have like can't like don't have like very low give a shit. Right. Like the piece of information that was elicited there was the fact that they're unwilling to do work. Okay, cool. Thanks. I didn't need a PhD design test in order to do that. I literally needed a Google Doc with like 7 questions on it.
So if you think of the two extremes of that kind of question, right, there's the like you spent 20 seconds and were like you didn't give a crap, like, okay, we don't want you, right? And then there's the like, I wrote tomes and I overdid it and I spent hours and hours and hours and that was not the intent of the exercise. And I, on some of this interview type problems that we've given people to take home, I have actually debated this, because we've biased towards saying take your time, right? It only takes, let me make a number up. Like, we used to give, once upon a time, before pandemic, we used to give like a problem that you could achieve in about 3 hours, right? But we didn't want to be like on that. That's a non-trivial amount of time, right? This was a programming kind of problem. So we would be like, you get a week, like, but not because we want you to spend a week, like just to not give you any particular time pressure. But then you end up with people, and I wonder how you feel about this, where they will fill the time. And so when you ask them at the end, they're like, I put like 12 hours into this. I like my whole weekend went into this. And it's like, cause they filled the time like a gas, you know, it's like, it's just, they couldn't help themselves. And I get it. They're like perfectionists, you know, there's all these DNA. And I'm like, so sometimes I'm like, should we scope it? Should we put a clock on you just to help you realize like, this is not the intent.
Yeah. What I do there is, yeah, like, I don't know. It's interesting. Like, I don't know what the upside would necessarily be. Again, this kind of goes back to like, what action are you taking from the signal? I don't necessarily know what the action would be that you would take if somebody like spent 3 hours on it and like went ham. Maybe I would only be impressed, I suppose.
I mean, the ratio, if I had the ratio, right, that'd be key. Like, if you give me the same response in 8 hours versus 3 hours, and it's the same quality, like that means something in programming for sure.
Like, oh, well, yeah, that definitely is true.
But we don't have that knowledge.
Sure. Well, I don't know.
From the interview. We don't time them, right? So they would just volunteer that information.
Perhaps, except like one of the things that I've actually, has always been entertaining to me is, because it's executed in a Google Doc, you actually have the version history.
Because it's your Google Doc, right?
Yeah, because it's our Google Doc. So you get to see like, you know, how long it took somebody. I mean, in our case, like, we want to be respectful of the candidate. So it's just like, hey, look, here's this thing. Like, the goal of this is to understand how you express yourself in written format. Obviously, that's extremely important in sales. This should probably take you about an hour. Like, don't worry about going crazy, but just use this as an opportunity to like show off, right? Help us get to know you better and show off. right?
Yep. I think that's a good frame. I think it's setting some amount of expectations, because some people might go, I want the Mona Lisa. And you're like, okay, well, that's a different task than yeah, just write me an hour as good as you can. But, you know, well, okay, Pete, that brings me to something that you have berated me about outside of this conversation. But since you say it's a core skill of a salesperson, mm-hmm. what is good writing in the realm of this side of the business, right? We're not writing A Tale of Two Cities. What is good writing? Like, does Atrium test for that too?
Honestly, do things have a beginning, middle, and an end? And like, are they grammatically correct? And do you not have do you have good attention to detail? That's pretty much it. Because if you think about like the predominant, amount of like writing that someone's going to be doing, it's like email recaps off of like delineating use cases that were identified and like just, being clear, right? One of the things that's really powerful about writing is that writing is more of a reflection of thinking than it is like a thing unto itself. And so oftentimes it's a very good identifier when someone's unclear in their writing. Usually what it means is it's not that they're not a great writer. It's just that like they're not thinking in a very organized, not a very organized fashion, which is, that's problematic for selling, right? Like that's as a seller, you have to have situational awareness of like where you are in the deal and how the different people are interacting with each other and what have you. And so if you struggle to kind of like understand like where we're at, if you will, that's going to be very problematic for a mid-market sale that has like multiple stakeholders and what have you, right? Communicating to an audience requires you to inhabit their brain and like understand like what their state is, which essentially is right. And what that is that's like a core requirement of selling, is understanding the state of the world and how Boris's brain is orientated as compared to this other, like what is the customer success leader thinking versus what is the data leader thinking versus what is the RevOps functionary who like reports in, like what are they thinking? What are their different incentives, et cetera, et cetera. All of that requires like comprehending their state, like their mental state and like what their different incentives are. It's like a little micro Dunbar situation, right? It's like, what all the monkeys think about each other. And so being an effective like writer oftentimes like is a good signifier of that, because I am thinking about what right, in order to then write things down, in order to change what or react to what or orient your brain in a different direction. But again, like most of the time salespeople are doing that in spoken language, right? But like in order to do it effectively in spoken language, I have to understand the state of everybody's brain in order to orient them in the right direction and then move the conversation forward and move that business forward.
Yeah. There's the naive thing that I remember, when you're a kid and you're in school and you're young and you're like, they ask you a question and you're like, I know the answer, but I don't know how to say it. You haven't learned how to express yourself well enough. And you're like, no, you can't think it if you don't know how to say it. Right. But your point, I think is deeper and better, which is good writing is a form of empathy. It means you understand your interlocutor, right? You understand mm-hmm. what the other side wants to see or what they need to know in order to transfer your state into theirs. And that is kind of different, I think, than the generic way you think about writing, which is like just the quality of prose. And
And that's why the way that I said this is that salespeople are professional communicators, and one mechanism by which they communicate is the written word. The other mechanism by which they communicate is like live over Zoom. Like one of my colleagues, this gentleman named Carson Kaufman, he's a customer success manager over mm-hmm. here. He used to be an AE, but one of his jokes is that sales is a Broadway play put on by psychologists. Because what you are is like you're a performer, but what you're doing is you're constantly thinking about the other person's state of mind. And this is why like sales calls are really exhausting, is because what you're doing is if you're doing them effectively, what you're doing is you're constantly thinking about the state of the other person, right? And like, what are they thinking right now? How much information do they have? Like, what is their orientation? What step do I need to take next? And then how do I communicate that in a way that is effective that then drives them that way? And then if you do that, this is why like party calls are like the most exhausting thing in sales. Cause if you have multiple stakeholders and you're trying to process all of their, like all of their states of mind at once, it's a high CPU exercise, right? Huh. And the way that Carson describes it is, a Broadway play put on by psychologists, right?
Yeah, you're right. Because when you put on a play, the crowd is black. It's like it's hidden behind the lights, right? Like you're
reacting.
You don't have to think about them. And yeah, crowds are easier to understand than individuals. Like groups, small groups of individuals are much harder, right? Like crowd is like you can tell. There's an energy. There's a there's like a above a certain percentage of people sleeping. Like it's obvious. You don't have to look at every single person. You just kind of know from the energy. By the way, I wonder. You know, I've heard you mention this. In the what is it like the what pianists do to practice? And you told me like salespeople, one of the things that they should do is they should practice looking people in the eye.
Yeah.
Do you think we're going to emerge out of this pandemic like with a whole cohort of people who have lost that skill?
I don't think so. I mean, I think there's a lot of like I think it comes back pretty quick. This is something that I have a pretty dim view of remote like sales work for junior sellers, right? Like, you know, more senior sellers have been like outside sellers for forever, right? But like, you know, it kind of comes with the territory, get it, so to speak. And the reason why that was effective back in the day was because like you needed to be like Zoom didn't exist. So in order to have like a rich interface with somebody, you had to be local to them. Well, the problem is like if you're going to be local to people and you're going to be calling on them locally, you can only have like so many meetings in a day, like maybe two, right? If you're like moseying around. So then like if you can only have 10 customer facing meetings a week, right? Like your economic, like the average selling price is going to have to be pretty high in order to fund you as a rep and like throw off contribution margin to the business. And this is actually one of the kind of key innovations of SaaS. You know, people talk about Salesforce and how it's like, you know, it's impactful because it's like a cloud CRM or whatever. One of the like most impactful things about Salesforce was like figuring out how to like scalably sell SaaS to the mid-market, because like a cloud delivery model makes it so your economics can be cheaper and you can sell at a lower price.
Right.
The problem is that if you're selling like feet on the street, your price has to be higher in order for the economics to pencil out.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you can double the number of customer facing meetings that people have by virtualizing it and having it over the phone or over Zoom. Right. So now what you have is like, so inside sales, but like of a high ASP product, not like inside sales, like taking orders from Comcast or whatever, can be a very impactful thing, because now you can also have like cheaper people who are doing it because the volumes are higher, the prices are lower. You can have like a cheaper type of person, but that person needs training, right? And they need monitoring, they need management, et cetera. Like, and so having, you know, a bunch of 24-year-olds or a bunch of 26-year-olds working remote from like the corner of their kitchen table or whatever is like really tough, because like it's one, and I think that like the whole remote work thing is pretty heavily like a miss. Like when people get in like religious wars on this stuff on like Twitter or whatever, it's a bunch of like 40-year-olds who are misunderstanding what it means to be a 24 or a 26-year-old. And so pretending that a 24-year-old or a 26-year-old is going to gain the same like scale of skills through like intentional, you know, construction of like a training harness or whatever, as compared to just like soaking in it all day long, sitting next to a bunch of other reps, is just like, you're telling yourself a story. And it's like not intellectually honest. And the same is true when you interface with people live, right? And the thing that I like to say on this is like we're starting to, we have a bunch of customer facing, because we have like, you know, Atrium's got nearly 300 customers. So like we can go to any major city and we have like a bunch of customers and it's great. So I'm like, hey, cool, I'm taking you guys out. We're going to, you know, we're going to this steak restaurant, or we're going to like this vegan restaurant or whatever, you know. And people are like, man, I really like these like live events. It's like, yeah, man, it's like kind of hard to mess with like hundreds of thousands of years of evolution, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, hold on. They're also like extra awesome for the next year or two, right? And then we'll see where we, if we revert to a baseline. But
sure.
I hear your point about, like, I mean, I definitely, like, I bumped into someone at this conference this week and I couldn't resist. I was like, I hugged them. Like, I was just like, it came out of me and I just couldn't resist. I was like, holy cow, I haven't seen you in like, who knows how long, and you're in person. But the rate of compound learning that you get from
bananas
being next to a bunch of people is yeah. You're right, is... I think we're really underestimating the effect there.
Yeah, it's kind of like what we were talking about as relates to like the it's like data, the number of places where like metrics and data show up is like so little compared to what it should be, right? And the reason why is because like if the only place where you can take action using data is like like a shitty wall of charts in Tableau, then like, and it requires like a really thoughtful like SQL analyst to put it together. Do you know how many, like how much of that's going to happen? Like very little, right? Versus if we instead, what we can do is we can shove like insights or answers. I was talking to somebody the other day and I was explaining census. They're like, oh, those are answers. And I was like, yeah, you're right. They are answers. Like if you can shove an answer into an appropriate spot, the number, like think about all the different places where you can shove those answers. There's like so many of them, right? And the same, like it's almost kind of like thinking about like the monolithicity of like those, like now we're going to do some analysis versus just like, like, no, we're not going to do some analysis. Like, we're going to have little bits of analysis that are going to show up in all the appropriate places in order to drive the right action. And the same is true with like management and coaching. Like, I see with my reps all the time, someone gets off a call and like throws their headset down because they just had like a totally shitty, miserable call. Oh, you know what we should do? We should wait a week for our coaching session before we talk about that. No, it's bananas, right? Like instead you say like, hey, what happened? Oh, XYZ happened. Oh, okay. Well, how did you think about XYZ and like ABC? Oh man, I totally didn't think about that. Yeah, totally, man. Like da da da. And so what ends up happening is you have these like 3, 4, 5 minute, you know, micro coaching interactions, not only that are like manager to individual, but also like peer to peer. And he's like, oh, well, like that person, they can just get off their call. And then like they command tab over to Slack and then they like, you know, command K over to like their buddy. Oh man, that buddy's on a meeting. So he's not actually on a meeting. He's just kind of like sitting there. Right. But you can't tell that because like Slack doesn't give you good like keyboard mouse state or anything like that. So like people are like, oh, well, like people are just like a Slack call away. No one does that. It's too high friction. No. Yeah. Like my buddy Parker has this good, so Parker Thompson, who is like Startup L Jackson, he works at AngelList right now. He had this great tweet. He was like, it's like, it turns out that an office is like a pretty helpful piece of B2B technology.
Oh, I've been joking. I really should tweet this. Like, I feel like there's going to be a blog post any minute now. I've been saying it for like 2-3 months. Someone who's 24 to 26 is going to write it. Not you and me.
Yeah.
And not Parker. Like, and it's going to be a blog post that says, or whatever the kids use these days. And it'll be, check out this new technology. It's called the office. Like,
I know.
It'll just be like, right. It has all these features. It's so great. Like, I mean,
totally. It's absolutely bananas. I get to like sit next to like a senior person and like learn from them all day long. It's like, you know, it's amazing.
I get to have lunch, not alone. Like,
I know. Yeah. No, I do think that there is like, I think though there is an insight there. Like, I do think that there's definitely like an asymptote where like as sellers, you know, the like once you get past like a dozen or so like people who are together in a given environment, at that point, like if you have a sales floor and like the other half of the bit, like the other half of the office floor is like another 50 people, like you don't interact with those other 50 people. Like, so the utility associated with like 100 salespeople being together or 50 salespeople being together versus like 5 or 10 in a cluster in Portland or Seattle or Chicago or Denver or Salt Lake City or downtown LA or Santa Barbara, like that I get, right? But what you still need is you need like the peer-to-peer interaction and like the ability to have like a porous like micro coaching situations, right? And so like that means like not sitting, it's not remote work, it's like clustered work, right? Like, you know, you can hire salespeople that live in Santa Barbara, just make sure there's like 4 or 5 of them.
Yeah. In the heat of the pandemic, I would pontificate with friends and say, like, are we going to end up with like guild cities? If people can live wherever they want and you don't want to live next to your company, maybe you'll live next to your guild. So there'll be towns of only salespeople and towns of only engineers and towns of, you know, only marketers, which would be some kind of hellscape, obviously. But
I love it. That'll do wonders for interdisciplinarity.
Yeah, sure. But of course you learn from your other departments, especially in our field where it's like, do you understand the product? No, like an hour with an engineer will do wonders. And now we have to wait till there's an offsite for those things to happen, right? Which is way too long.
Yeah, exactly. Do you understand the user engineer? You should probably like go talk to customer success, right? Oh, like you ran into them, like you were talking about it side by side and realize that you were missing comprehension of an entire like sub persona of like who uses your software.
Yeah. And you might be well placed for this, but it really just requires all of us to get, if we're going to stay in this environment, it just requires way more conscientiousness across the board. It's like, now we have to have formal sharing of this knowledge. Yep. We're going to have a weekly, like, let me show you 12 use cases we saw this week so that the engineers are like getting exposed. You have to make it all very formalized. Like you said, it's like, yeah. no one's a Slack call away. There's no such thing. It's like, if it's not tapping on your shoulder is reasonable, but
yeah, it goes from organic to like declarative.
Yeah. Yeah. And so maybe for some people that will be great. Like they will be able to, you know, generate an organization declaratively.
I think it puts a lot of pressure on organizations. Like essentially you have to, yeah. Like instead of having, it's like organization of like configuration or convention, right? The convention was like, you just like all sit together and like, you know, like the social stuff kind of like is like the glue. And so if you then like foist that on yourself early in your existence as a startup, you know, that's non-trivial overhead right there. Now there's definitely like, you know, recruiting benefits that come along with it. So the question is like, where did the juice and the squeeze kind of like cross each other in terms of the utility versus like kind of cost lines there? My hunch is that the recruiting benefits don't start showing up until you get to a certain scale wherein you're like hiring enough people that you're kind of like constrained by your local geography. That's kind of my hunch. I can see it cutting the other direction though. Like if it turns out that you have people that you've worked with historically, or you have a lot of the context already built, then the rapidity by which you can hire is probably helpful there. But if it's all things being equal, like in a very early stage environment, it probably makes a lot more sense for people to be sitting like back to back such that the feedback loops are like really, 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 really rapid. And then you get to the point where it's just like, oh man, we're hiring our, you know, fifth AE or like eighth AE or whatever. And like, you know, maybe engineering is better. Like we're going from like our pure MVP where we had like our second, third, fourth, fifth engineer. And it's not, now it's like, okay, cool. We're going to hire another 10 more. And it's like, okay, well, man, like maybe now is the point at which we decide that we're going to start supporting, you know, kind of remote staff in that regard, because we're going to eat the overhead of having to have this declarative culture.
Yep.
But the benefit is like, we're going to be able to hire those 10 engineers in like a quarter as opposed to like 24 months.
Yeah.
Right. And that might be really worth it.
It could be really worth it. And even there, it's not fair, right? Because like engineering, while there's a lot to be learned orally, et cetera, it's not fair to compare it to sales in your example, because the so much of what you learn is by reading other people's code. And yeah, of course you got a pair program. Those are, but like you get such an advantage there in terms of improving yourself. I think all in all, this, unless some new information comes to light, I think this just harms people early in their career, right? Because you don't have the existing network. So your friend's not going to hire you, right? Like, it's not like, your 40-year-old VP is like, I know people in Salt Lake, let's just hire them. I'm like, all right, well, you trust them. Sure. You know, but if you don't have the network, you want to improve yourself by default. I think pure remote harms early career.
Yeah. I think the other thing too, is like when people get into these religious wars, they don't think about like how different disciplines perform differently. Right. So the reason why it's like, I would never say like I'm the end all be all like of understanding how to make engineers more effective. Now, I would advance the claim that there's probably upside associated with engineers being kind of like next to each other, at least, you know, on an infrequent basis. For sure. As opposed to like, but what I will agree, like, you know, vociferously claim is that like salespeople being next to each other ends up being very important, because like you, like not just from a learning standpoint, like you get off a call and you, like, you know, sales is very hard, right? People are like telling you no, they don't want to change, they're being recalcitrant, like you live in the future and you know a secret about like how the future state ought to be, and then like you're spending all your time talking with people who are like, you know, resistant to that. So it's like high calorie. And so especially, and then people can also be like very unpleasant. So you get off a call like that. And so having an immediate social feedback loop right there can be, you know, very, very, very impactful. Similarly, salespeople communicate information in kind of like snippets, right? Like objection handles, or like they're called talk tracks, right? You know, like you hear me using them all the time. I have like all these like little metaphors that I like throw off here or there or whatever. And so like if you were to declare all those, it'd be a gigantic Google Doc or whatever. Right. Like there's a knowledge management problem associated with sales that a bunch of people are trying to solve, like Guru and HighSpot and Speckit and whatever. Yeah. But like one of the biggest problems is like you just have all these little like snippets right, that are like undeclared anywhere. Right. And so then, you know, in larger organizations, you then try to get like a product marketer or somebody like that to declare it. But then now you have a search problem in order to find those at the appropriate point in time. And so this is like what the way that you solve this, of course, is you just groove, like humans are really good at this. If you just like groove their brain appropriately. Now, what we would like to be able to do is figure out how to do it like Neo in the Matrix. We're just like, oh, I needed to learn how to Kung Fu. And he just goes like, all right, cool. I just, what is it? Trinity. I need to teach me Kung Fu.
Yeah, teach
Trinity.
Me Kung Fu.
I need to learn, like Trinity.
Tank was
the Yeah, Tank. That's right. Yeah, Trinity's next one. Tank. I needed to fly this helicopter.
Right.
Okay, cool.
Right.
You can. Okay, thanks. Right.
Which, by the way, Pete, in life, like the sci-fi-ness of that is funny to me because like so many things, people could read your book cover to cover, right?
Yeah.
Like founders could go read your book cover to cover. And it's not like the next sales conversation they will be magically great. Like you still have to put in the reps. Like there's there's like muscles have to be built, right?
Yep.
You know, only in a maybe pure virtual construct can you download the knowledge.
Yeah.
There's a set of things like that where it's like, you know, you can learn multiplication tables purely by learning multiplication tables, but
you have to do the repetitions. And this is where like there's a company called Second Nature that I really like. That what they do is they do virtual training environments for sales organizations. So it's like ML driven. And what you do is like, so the way that you get people to do repetitions is like to use another kind of baseball or it's like sport analogy is like, you know, a batting cage. Like what you really want is like a batting cage. So you say, hey, go in here and like work on hitting curveballs, right? Go in here and work on like this situation right here. Right. And then the pitching machine just like throws the ball at you. Right. And you like, you know, take 100 swings or whatever. And so these simulations end up being very effective for driving versus, you know, the only time you try to hit a curveball is in a game when like there's a runner on second base and like a lot of like it's a high pressure situation. There's a lot of risk on the line. So this company Second Nature makes the software that does ML driven kind of simulations where like you give it, you know, this corpus of like questions and like acceptable answers. And then the robot interlocutor will like ask you these things and be like, so Boris, like how is census different than using Tableau for this? Well, I'm glad you asked that. Jenny is the name of the AI. Well, I'm glad you asked that, Jenny. One of the things that we find is that it's really, you know, people want to have this information present in the tools that they use day to day, like Salesforce or HubSpot or Marketo. Also, it's extremely important to be able to take action on it using the workflows that they use, whether it's manually or automated. And so, you know, oftentimes that's very difficult to do when you're just looking at a visualization in traditional BI. Does that answer your question, Jenny? And then of course it like does the like, you know, in the background and like, you know, compares like how your bag of words compared to the bag of words that it had and it goes like, good, you answered it correctly or you missed these things right here, bro.
And it does space repetition basically on that?
Exactly. And so what you're doing then is like, but the point there is like the robot's not doing the work, like you're still grooving your brain. Right.
Yep. And this will here. I'll take us to our final theme here, which is like to me, all of this, like, why does doing 25 or 100 curveballs in a row, or like doing these sales objections, kind of in a tight loop, it helps because it improves a shorter feedback loop. Clearly, just makes us better, faster. Right. Like both. There's the hard part, like how do you make the organizational loops, you know, stronger, but. But even as an individual, like I think 100 curveballs in a row with coaching, with someone telling you a little to the left, a little to the right, a little to the left, like that's the key. I mean, if you just do it randomly, I don't know if that helps. But there's clearly like almost biologically we learn better that way than the once a week do a curveball or once a day do a curveball.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, hey, look, why would you want to know, to use the customer success example, why would you only want to know that one of your customers has like fallen off with respect to their usage 2 weeks later at the customer usage review meeting?
Yeah.
You would want an alert to let you know in the meantime. Or alternative, like, you know, why would you want to wait until your quarterly business review with the account, right? Where you go and, you know, the data team delivers this like massive CSV or whatever that you then like slice and dice and like put into a deck or whatever. Like, why would you not want to look at that on a weekly basis in your one-on-one pipe review, your customer pipe review with your manager of customer success and your little, you know, a helpful little CSM, and you scan across the like couple hundred users that you're responsible for, and like you look for hotspots there, and then you can literally take an action there because like their email address is right there, and you're like, you literally like just like click template, send. Done. Right? Like, why would you wait to the QBR? So say, I think that's kind of like the theme. It's like, why would you wait? Why would you wait? Yeah. Why would you wait?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and as a manager, that's obvious. But to your point about like, you improve as an individual by bringing the feedback closer to when the event occurred. Like when you had that bad sales call, it's so much higher valued when it's raw 5 minutes later. You know, just this, that's the thing you did. Oh, okay, great. Like you might even forget a week later and someone has to rewatch the video. Yeah. And it's like, you know, all these things.
I do this all the time. Like I sit here next to 10 AEs and I'm like sitting here doing email, and then I hear them do something. I'm like, okay, cool. You opened that agenda wrong. You missed this thing. So the way that you're supposed to, so we have our agenda set script at Atrium. It's like, so, hey, okay. Boris, I'm really glad that you met us today. The way that we like to run these calls is I'm going to ask you a few questions to kind of understand a little bit more about how Census uses data to improve the performance of their sales team. Kind of based on what we find right there, what we're going to do is we'll kind of go through some slides. You know, if it seems like it's potentially an interesting fit, we'll go through some slides, kind of give you some context there. And then we're just going to turn on a free Atrium account for you because it takes like 2 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes to turn on. Does that sound good to you, Voris? Yeah, sounds great. Yeah. Okay, great. And, you know, one of my reps the other day dropped off the last part there, right? It's like, we're going to set up your Atrium account. And then that's a really important thing because like one of the things that we have this superpower at Atrium.
Because it's the dangling candy that I'm waiting for at the end of the meeting. It keeps me excited.
Yeah, literally takes you 3 minutes to turn on an Atrium account. So what we want to do is we want to prime people constantly. Like, you're going to turn on an account. 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 So this rep, like, you know, dropped that part off. And I'm like sitting here doing email. And I'm like, and I like take a little post-it note and I write it down. And then like she gets off the call and I'm like, hey, Susie, come here for a second. I'm like, hey, did you notice? And she's like, oh man, I totally didn't even realize. Yeah, that's cool. Hey, can you go do 10 of those? Can you just go do 10, just like, you know, into your monitor, right? Just groove it. It's fine. All right. Just go do 10.
This is, by the way, that sentence is probably about as far away as it gets from managing an engineer to managing a salesperson, that you say to someone like, just go to the mirror and do this 10 times right now, more or less. It is somewhat hard to say, like, so you see that bug you just caused? Like,
yeah, but like this is, yeah,
you know, like,
but it's the difference between, like, I mean, what salespeople do is they, and this is why it's so different. This is why the remote work situation is so dramatically different in both situations, because like what salespeople do is they do like lots of like shallow concurrent while loops, not super shallow, but like they have 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 opportunities that they're working concurrently. And what they're doing is like, there's like 20 or 40 or 80 or 100 like subroutines that they could be calling at any given point in time. But what they have to do is they have to do each of those subroutines with like excellent precision.
Yeah.
Right. And so what they need to do is like be able to call it out of the, like this, the, like the snippets that we're talking about. They need to be able to call it and it has to be able to execute excellently. Whereas with engineering, what you're doing is you're pretty much constantly building the same thing. Like, sorry, not the same thing. You're always building something new.
Yeah.
Usually. Right.
I think what an engineer has to do is hold a very complex model in their head. They have to be able to load a large, single, complex data set into their brain.
Yeah.
Because that's what you have to hold in your mind as you manipulate basically the system. Right.
Versus what a salesperson has to do is they have to hold like a different set of state in their brain, which is like an inventory of subroutines that they have to be able to call at a given point in time, predicated on the state that they are observing in front of them.
Right. Right.
And so what they have to do is they have to, like, you know, the thing that people say, like, oh, read the room, right? Like, that's what salespeople have to do, is they have to read the room. They have to, like, so this is like the John Boyd, you probably have read John Boyd, like OODA loops, right? Like, OODA loops. You have to observe this. Yeah. You have to observe the state in the world. It is very much like being a fighter pilot, right? You have to observe the state in the world, understand what's going on, and then, like, you know, effectively, and then call the appropriate subroutine in order to be like, cool, I need to do this thing in this moment. and then execute on it and then loop back again and see, oh, did that work? And this is why sales calls are exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. All right, Pete, we went way as long as I predicted. We went into a nice long conversation. I'll ask you one super short finishing question. It'll be a nice little Easter egg for everybody. Like you have self-proclaimed, I believe you've called yourself, you know, what from the outside, like Censis's chief solutions consultant or something to that effect.
No, I said, like, if I ever get fired from my job as the founder of my company, I'll go be a solutions consultant in Censis.
Perfect. So what is, of all the workflows, all the automations you've got tied to your Censis data, what's the one you could, like, you cannot lose? Like what's the one that, like, if I took it away tomorrow, you'd be like, oh shit.
Yeah. I think, are you going to tell my AE? You're not allowed to. Okay. So the, so what we've done in Censis that's like super rad, or actually in Salesforce, is so we have all this like great data on the contact objects, right? You know, probably about 30 fields or so. And so like there just turns out that there's like a, you know, a half dozen or so kind of fields that end up mattering. It's like trailing 30-day page views, right? And then like, and then we have our like product decomposed in a little bit. It's like, hey, it's like how many page views, how many emails is the software sending the person? Like, so people create these, like people create these views and then they have them sent to themselves. So like, that's a really important thing to, for folks to, you know, to keep them re-engaged in the product. Another thing too, is that people have, it's really important for them to have multiple views, right? Because if you think about the different needs that a sales organization has, like, oh, I want to understand how the prospecting is going. Usually that's like a dashboard that lives over here, maybe with like an alert feed. But then I have another thing, which is like, I want to understand how our pipeline hygiene is. Well, that's a different view, right? With a different set of metrics on it. And so these are almost like initiatives. And so the way that we, our abstractions are like, we have these, this bundle of like, you know, 100 plus metrics that can be permuted like hundreds of thousands of ways. Then those can be bundled into views, dashboard, you know, goal sets, alert feeds, et cetera. And then those sets of views are then bundled together into folders, which are usually correlated with like important use cases, like, you know, how's our pipeline hygiene? How's our prospecting? Okay. How are our pilots executing, et cetera? So it's really important for people. So the more views that people have, the more usage they'll have, because like these are things they care about. And so the, importantly, the way to organize them is in these folders. So another, like, folders is really important. So that ends up being these like five, you know, five or six KPIs that end up like really mattering. Plus like the over 12 months, which is the thing that we figured out together, right? Like the like page views per 30 days, like with a comma delimited. Like essentially it was just like, hey, can we put like a time series in here? And we're like, yeah, we can put it in there as a text string. So we took all that. And then what we realized was like, it was all across all these contact objects. So what we did was we created a related list in Salesforce, where literally what you can do is we did this workflow where you populate, we call them, you know, licensed core users. So you can just go to an account object on Salesforce, hover over the related list, licensed core users, and a dropdown appears of all these contact objects with all those fields as the columns. So literally what you can do is you can go into an account, you hover over this related list, and you can just see like, here's the 5 users, or here's the 10 users, here's the 15 users in the account. And it's ranked by, you know, days active in the last 30 days.
Got it.
So at a glance, like a CSM, like literally they just like, they search for the account. They just pop right there. They can see exactly like what the situation is. And like, it's just like at a glance, they can kind of like get a vibe as like what the health of the account is.
Got
like it. That. Yeah. I mean, that was essentially like us like creating like a low rent, like Catalyst or like Gainsight in Salesforce, just using Censis right there.
That's awesome. Well,
our CS team loves it. Loves it, loves it, loves it.
I know there's at least one listener of this podcast who's in no way a data person, and they're just purely a CS person. And so I had her in mind today. And then so this way she walks away and like, that's what I should go build. So that's perfect. Well, listen, Pete, thank you for dedicating this much time to me. I was like hanging out with you. So thanks again.
Killer, man. Have a good rest of your day, okay?
Well, folks, until next time, this is The Sequel Show. Special thanks to Joe Stevens for our theme song, and thanks to all of you for listening and supporting the show. If you haven't already, subscribe anywhere you listen to podcasts to get notified for future episodes.